Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to Pool at a Time, or Please Only One Lie at a Time. We are still studying, the Candace Owens book Blackout from the fine year of 2020. I am the main book reading asshole here, Thomas Anderson, and with me, as always, is
Matthew Anderson. There I remembered go. This time.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, good work. Good for you. Okay, so we are still in the introduction. We're going to try to get through the rest of the introduction tonight. But before we start that, do you have anything you want to add? Aside from it's been a while since we've done this, because life gets in the way sometimes.
Yeah, it's been a little bit since we've done this. And still not, as always, looking forward to the soda.
We've got one tonight that I hope is good. I really do. But we'll get to that later. So, where we left off, Candace Owens was talking about Civil War reconstruction. So, knowing how shows like this go, let me inform you of how audiences like this work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you probably don't know.
No.
But I do. Having been a long-time Knowledge Fight and Behind the Bastards listener, I can tell you what people are going to do when they discover this show is they're probably going to go... They're going to listen to whatever episode is most recent, mm-hmm. maybe a couple of them. And then they'll go, oh, there's a back catalog that I need to get familiar with. And they'll start from there. These unfortunate souls have now listened to four episodes, and we're on number five, and we're still not through with the fucking introduction of this book.
Mm-hmm. Still not.
No, but we're going to try to get through the rest of it tonight.
Oh, don't forget about the message from first one,
Yes, I will be editing, and they will have heard it by now.
Okay.
But it still goes to reason. I am going to be editing in. You will have heard it by now. But, I talked highly of a podcast called Opening Arguments and also Clean Up on Aisle 45 some time ago. And at the time, it was not known that Andrew Torres... was a credibly accused sex pest. But that is a known thing now. I do not recommend his podcasts anymore. For what it's worth, don't go to those shows. I'm sorry I recommended them, and we are moving on. So, when we last left Miss Owens and her narrative story, she was talking about how... the Civil War and troops were stationed throughout the southern states, and they left after Reconstruction was considered over. So what we get forward to here is her tale. Okay, she goes on to say, we'll pick up where we left off. Naturally, after so many demeaning blows delivered at the hands of Democrats, blacks remained fiercely loyal to the Republican Party. So when did this change? Miss Owens naturally has an idea. Says 50 years, in her words, 50 years later, when the nation was engulfed by the Great Depression, a Democrat's promise of government programs that would lift every American out caught the attention of struggling black citizens. In March 1936, 8 months before the presidential election pitting Franklin Delano Roosevelt against Republican Alf Landon, let's stop her there. From Wikipedia. Alf Landon supported many components of the New Deal, but criticized some aspects that he found inefficient. The 1936 Republican National Convention selected Landon as the Republican Party's presidential nominee. He proved to be an ineffective campaigner and carried just two states in the election.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's real bad.
It's real bad.
Even during that time...
Neither one of those states was his home state of Kansas.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, later in life, he supported the Marshall Plan and President Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society programs, which were also known as the War on Poverty, which were actually pretty fucking effective. Lyndon B. Johnson was a troubled individual. He is the guy who took over after JFK was assassinated.
Okay.
So, Wikipedia goes on to say that Landon did not support the party platforms at the time, which included getting rid of Social Security. The Republicans have never wanted Social Security to be a thing. They've always tried to get rid of it. Hmm. But Social Security at the time was still new. He liked Social Security and sought during his term as governor of Kansas to get Kansas into the system because it wasn't. Huh. A lot of states opted out. Kansas had done so, and he was like, no, this is really good because people need this. I mean, especially when you're talking about Kansas, which had and still has a strong farming culture. Yeah. Social Security does act as a social safety net for people when they're too old to fucking farm.
Yeah.
So, he liked most of the New Deal that Roosevelt started. He lost largely because he rarely ever traveled to campaign. He only got 8 electoral votes. All of them from Maine and Vermont. Roosevelt got 523.
Hmm.
Not even his home state voted for him. By all accounts, he was a, quote, liberal Republican in his own time.
Yeah.
And these days, he would be called a rhino or a Republican in name only.
Hmm.
He was a non-racist that willingly shared office space with blacks and was all for trade unions.
Yeah.
Which the Republicans generally were not for trade unions. Like I said, by all accounts, he was a decent man, and he did a series of lectures after he retired from politics, and his speeches have been performed by all but 3 presidents at various events. Like, they pick out one of his speeches, and they go and they do it, usually for some sort of charity event.
Yeah.
I haven't looked into his speeches, but I'm hoping when I do go for it eventually that I'm not depressed.
Yeah, but...
I just, you know, you really got to hold out hope on these things.
Yeah.
You really do. Yeah. Because I don't want to talk big about him, and then I go into one of his speeches and go, oh, shit. Oh, no. No, no, no. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I would hope he remained decent. Anyway, he lost a huge landslide to Roosevelt.
Yeah.
The Republicans ran a shit offer, and they didn't have him go out and campaign his message because it was a bad campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Going on from there, Candace says, Kelly Miller of the Pittsburgh Courier, one of the most widely read black newspapers in the country, explained why he believed blacks should keep Roosevelt in the White House. He wrote, I am for the re-election of Roosevelt because his administration has done as much for the benefit of the Negro as could have been humanly expected under all of the handicapping circumstances with which he had to contend. Because, yeah, people fought him at every stage.
Yeah.
There has been no hint or squint in the direction of hostile and unfriendly racial legislation. Scarcely a harsh denunciatory word has been heard in the halls of Congress against the Negro, such as we had become accustomed to for a generation under both Democratic and Republican rule. Roosevelt has given the Negro larger recognition by way of a point of positions than any other administration, Democratic or Republican, since Theodore Roosevelt. In the administration of huge appropriations for work and relief, the Negro has shared according to his needs. And this is where Candace cuts it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's for dramatic effect. Because the phrase, according to his needs, is a dog whistle to scare Republicans into thinking someone's a communist. That's why you cut off a quote there in your book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone familiar with her work and the work of others in the sphere thinks that the wording shared according to his needs is a dog whistle for communism. Some of the remaining content of this paper goes on to say, on the other hand, President Roosevelt's friendly and generous treatment of the colored man is known and acknowledged of all men. He has placed on the relief roll perhaps 1/3 of the colored race. Selection has been made according to need and not according to race. The administration has expressly forbidden and condemned race discrimination in such assignments as far as these matters can be controlled by government authority. But Roosevelt seeks to reduce discrimination to a minimum. President Roosevelt has appointed or has had assigned more colored persons to high places under the government than occurred under Taft, Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover, his 4 Republican predecessors since Theodore Roosevelt. Now, the Roosevelts were distant cousins.
Yeah.
So, Mrs. Roosevelt, the president's helpmate and companion, is deeply and vitally concerned with questions of social justice and civic righteousness. She does not disdain to include the colored race in this ennobling circle. Her sympathy for and her interest in the welfare of the race is no less manifest than that of her distinguished husband. Mrs. Roosevelt's bold and courageous stand for the betterment and fair treatment of colored people will and should attract many colored voters, especially among the women who constitute half of the voting strength of the race. Now, I have to acknowledge something important here. I was initially unable to find the entire text of this article, which was in a newspaper called The Afro-American, which was printed in Baltimore, Maryland in 1936. The current website for the paper, which has of course changed hands since the 1930s, doesn't have an archive for Kelly Miller.
Yeah.
They should. Mm-hmm. They fucking should. They don't. The only full text I could find online by Kelly Miller about Roosevelt was unfortunately not about FDR. It was a 20-page book he wrote about Theodore Roosevelt. So whatever Miss Owens found this to begin with is beyond me. Kelly Miller was an important commentator and mathematician during his time, and he was a fan of both Roosevelt administrations. Both Roosevelt presidents were known to be egalitarian, meaning they wanted everything to be as equal as possible. They wanted everybody on the same like playing field, at least more than other people in American politics at the time. I could only find the section I provided beyond what Candace quoted initially. I wound up going to the notes section of this book to see if Candace had in fact sourced this from somewhere. She did. Using the information provided, I went searching, and the only way I could see it in full was to go to the newspaper archive on newspapers.com, sign up for a free week, and then search for the author, date, and newspaper. What I found was, of course, much more than Candace shared.
Of course. That's
a long fucking article. He really goes into detail. It is a heavy supportive treatise on how good FDR has been, not just for blacks, but also the nation as a whole. But this entire valuable resource is held behind a paywall.
Hmm.
Now, I'm fairly certain that most people, regardless of outlook, won't use a service like this.
Yeah.
But also, most people that intend to trust Candace certainly won't seek out the full material. Yeah, which reminds me, I signed up for a full week. I have to actually back away from that, like, real quickly, because every 6 months, it's $75.
Oh, yay, yay, yay.
Yeah, $75 every 6 months to just scroll old-ass newspapers.
What?
That are only in PDF. Like, they're just scanning them in.
So, that's...
I mean, it's a nice service.
It's a good archive, but... But
it's run by Ancestry.com. Who's getting ducats of money from DNA tests and shit.
Yeah, well, I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So Candace goes on to say, quote, "While the New Deal was far from perfect and FDR stopped short of actively advocating for black civil rights, his efforts were deemed more substantive than his opposing Republican contender." That's true.
Yeah.
I'll give her that one. "Blacks saw a window of opportunity and they took it, with a decisive 71% of them casting their ballot on behalf of the Democrat nominee. Through the lens of their subhuman treatment and economic desperation, they felt that they had nothing to lose. Then, 30 years later, Democrat President Lyndon B. Johnson signed both the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 into law, all but cementing his party's stranglehold on the black vote for decades to come."
Mm.
And this is another stopping point.
All right.
Candace, in order to advance her version of events, is leaving out the following.
Of course. There's always something she leaves out.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Larry Elder is your idol and Larry Elder leaves shit out, then, follows. Yeah. "The United States Supreme Court, also known as the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, such as we have the POTUS, which is the President of the United States." And yes, it's okay to laugh. They're silly and stupid.
Well, it's the SCOTUS that I misheard you, and it sounded...
What? Go for it.
I thought you were saying fucking scotes.
Oh, like scrotes? Like
scrotes, that's what I meant. Yeah, it's scrotes.
Honestly, these days, there's only a couple of them that seem to be consistently decent.
Yeah.
They wear those robes all the time. You only see their heads, like... They could be a bunch of scrotes. We don't know. Scrotes my goats. So, way back in 1883, in a decision labeled Civil Rights Cases, they ruled that most of the Civil Rights Act of 1875 was unconstitutional, and that basically Congress did not have the power to prohibit discrimination in the private sector, thus stripping the Civil Rights Act of 1875 of much of its ability to protect actual fucking civil rights.
Mm.
So, all the rights that had been promised and enforced at that point for 8 years now didn't have to matter.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward several decades to the New Deal, and the Supreme Court gradually allowed some of it. In the 1930s, during the New Deal, the majority of Supreme Court justices gradually shifted their legal theory to allow for greater government regulation of the private sector under the Commerce Clause, thus paving the way for the federal government to enact civil rights laws prohibiting both public and private sector discrimination on the basis of the Commerce Clause. So it took about 50 fucking years.
Yeah.
50 years. You know how many people lived and died in 50 years back then?
A lot.
Enough to not remember the Civil fucking War. Yeah.
Yeah.
Influenced in part by the, quote, black cabinet advisors and the March on Washington movement just before the U.S. entered World War II, President Franklin D. Roosevelt issued Executive Order 8802, the first federal anti-discrimination order, and he established the Fair Employment Practices Committee. Then Roosevelt's successor, President Harry Truman, appointed the President's Committee on Civil Rights, proposed the 20th century's first comprehensive Civil Rights Act, and issued Executive Order 9980 and 9981, providing for fair employment and desegregation throughout the federal government and the armed forces. Hmm. You know, they recognized, okay, so we can't get private employers to do shit because they bitch and whine and kick and scream and cry and moan. And the Supreme Court's all like, you can't do that. No. Mm-hmm. No, Johnny McGas Station's got to be able to run McGas Station the way he wants to. But you know, Truman was like, well, yeah, but I have control of the fucking military, so he used that. Yeah. Almost wipes away the stain of Hiroshima.
Almost. It's a little hard to get that stain out. It's like a mustard stain on a white shirt, you know?
Yeah. Or like shadows permanently burned into the wall of a building.
That tends to happen.
From civilians.
Yeah.
Who had fuck all to do with anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. The Civil Rights Act of 1957, signed by President Dwight D. Eisenhower on September 9th, 1957, you know, the year it's named, was the first federal civil rights legislation since the Civil Rights Act of 1875 to become law. After the Supreme Court ruled school segregation unconstitutional in 1954's Brown v. Board of Education, Southern Democrats began a campaign of, quote, massive resistance against desegregation, and even the few moderate white leaders shifted to openly racist positions, partly in an effort to defuse calls for more far-reaching reforms. Eisenhower proposed a civil rights bill that would increase the protection of African-American voting rights. Now, despite having a limited impact on African-American voter participation at a time when black voter registration was only 20%, only 20% of them were voting.
Yeah.
The Civil Rights Act of 57 did establish the United States Commission on Civil Rights and the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. So by 1860, black voting had increased only 3%, and Congress passed the Civil Rights Act of 1960, which eliminated certain loopholes left by the 1957 Act. Now, what's important about all of that that Candace isn't fucking mentioning is that Eisenhower was a fucking Republican.
Ah, yeah.
A Republican who pushed through a fuck ton of civil rights legislation. Because having been an actual fucking general, the heavy general.
Yeah.
He was, you know, in at least informed about what soldiers' lives actually were fucking like.
Yeah.
You know. Eisenhower also gets credit for the highway system. It used to be known as the Eisenhower Highway System. It still is in some areas. But, yeah, so. So, yeah, Eisenhower was a Republican. Candace is painting a picture here that the Democrats have had a grip on black voters by passing measures that benefit them solely, but that isn't true.
Yeah.
Moving on, we come to the 1963 Kennedy Civil Rights Bill. In winning the 1960 United States presidential election, Kennedy took 70% of the African-American vote. But due to his somewhat narrow victory and Democrats' narrow majorities in Congress, he was wary to push hard for civil rights legislation for fear of losing Southern support. Moreover, according to the Miller Center, he wanted to wait until his second term to send Congress a civil rights bill. But with elevated racial tensions and a wave of African-American protests in the spring of 63, such as in Birmingham, Kennedy realized he had to act on civil rights. Kennedy first proposed the 1964 bill in his, quote, Report to the American People on Civil Rights on June 11, 63. He sought legislation, quote, giving all Americans the right to be served in facilities which are open to the public, hotels, restaurants, theaters, retail stores, and similar establishments, as well as, quote, greater protection for the right to vote. Mm-hmm. So in late July, Walter Reuther, president of the United Auto Workers, warned that if Congress failed to pass Kennedy's civil rights bill, the country would face another civil war. Now, you've probably seen pictures and shit of, like, lunch counters where they say, you know, whites only, and yeah. water fountains where it's, like, whites only and shit.
Yeah.
Black people were not allowed to use those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say probably, I think of that also extended outward to, like, Asians
mm-hmm.
weren't going to get a pass. They were going to have to use whatever they felt they could get away with, but...
Yeah.
You know, but that's also where we get, where we come down to things like Rosa Parks
mm-hmm.
declining at first nicely to give up her seat on a bus after a long day of work.
Yeah.
Because that was the rule in Alabama was, you know, if a white person wanted your seat on the bus, you were up front, you had to move.
Yeah.
And she refused.
Mm-hmm. There was also a clip I'd seen on YouTube from a movie or what... Something uh-huh. like that, and movie or TV show, but nonetheless, it was a black woman working in an office place, and it was during that time period, and mm-hmm. the boss was chewing her out, and she just yelled that she'd had enough of it, and she's like, you expect me to go all the way to the black-only bathroom that is three city blocks away from my desk, and then come back within a reasonable amount of time on my lunch break? No. And she was yelling this at the boss, and the boss said, fine, you know what? And he walked out there, he took one of the chairs, and he broke down the sign that said whites only and said, there, now you can use the restroom here.
Yeah.
Now everybody back to work. And all of the guys were just looking, all of the white guys were just looking at him like, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
She was his best secretary there, so.
Yeah. And, you know, and unfortunately, there weren't a lot of employers like that.
Yeah.
Now let's fast forward to today. Amazon.
Yeah.
Do you know about Amazon bathroom breaks?
No, I don't.
Well, you're about to learn some shit.
Okay.
I decided to, and this podcast and this host is not fucking problematic. I totally recommend the show Megacorp. The host on that show is a British guy named Jake Hanrahan. Funny name, good journalism.
Yeah.
He's got a very deep accent. Like... I'm gonna be honest, I love the show. His accent sometimes is a little off-putting, but he's yeah. serious about what he's doing, so it is very listenable. But one of his first episodes of Megacorp, which is in 11 episodes entirely about how Amazon sucks to yeah. work for. Amazon workers routinely... Okay, they're monitored at all times in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
When they're pulling packages, when they're taking them from the robots, whatever they're doing, they're routinely monitored at all times.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why Amazon workers have started trying to unionize over the past few years. And why recently in the town of Shakopee, we lost an Amazon warehouse because the workers were fucking tired of it.
Yeah.
And I think the state of Minnesota was tired of their shit too. But here's how bad it is at Amazon. Let's say you're pulling packages and shit and you realize, man, I got to use the restroom. Mm-hmm. There's no getting around this. I've got to use the restroom. You have to often go to one restroom that is, and you only get 15 minutes to go to take your restroom break mm-hmm. from the moment you say, I'm going to the restroom. The restrooms are typically one thing in the center of a building,
yeah.
which may be a 5-minute walk. You have to get checked out by metal detectors on your way there and on your way back. So you have maybe a 5-minute walk, add 2 minutes to that, you got to get checked out, then maybe you get to go to the restroom and you have to be back to your area within that 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, it may be one of the few times you actually see a manager. Getting hired at Amazon is entirely electronic. There were people interviewed on Megacorp that had only met their managers when they were being talked down to. Like, you know, you were on a restroom break for 17 minutes yesterday, and you know you only get 15. So in order to avoid that, what a lot of people do is, and Amazon workers today still talk about this shit, they will find bags of poop, bottles of piss everywhere in nooks and crannies around the warehouse because people are like, I just have to go now. So that's fireworks.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they started going on sale a few days ago. And
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's June 22nd right now, y'all. Yeah. So yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you want to talk about bad bathroom breaks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazon's got everybody beat. Hands down, champion.
Hmm.
Yeah. Amazon sucks. Yeah. I don't want to work for them ever. Really hope I don't ever work for them. But getting back into this. So, emulating the Civil Rights Act of 1875, you know, going back nearly 100 fucking years.
Yeah.
Because shit wasn't right then. Kennedy's civil rights bill included provisions to ban discrimination in public accommodations and enable the U.S. Attorney General to take out lawsuits against state governments that operated segregated school systems, among other provisions. But it did not include a number of provisions civil rights leaders deemed essential, including protection against police brutality, ending discrimination in private employment, and granting the Justice Department power to initiate desegregation or job discrimination lawsuits. So, you know, it gave them a lot of stuff, but they could still be discriminated against.
Yeah.
You know. And, of course, police violence. You know, like, if the cops beat you down, you typically can't sue them. We fortunately live in a state where people rioted and burned down a police precinct, and it's a lot easier in Minnesota to get by.
Yeah.
Try doing that shit in Florida.
Mm.
Good luck. Yeah, so Republicans, of course, fought the passage of this bill for an additional 8 months after Kennedy was killed.
Jesus.
The longest filibuster ran for 54 straight days and took up all the Senate's nights and weekends. The measures being fought the most were, of course, simple quality of life items, such as non-discrimination in hiring, keeping jobs, and receiving services such as getting food in a restaurant or seating on buses. There was no even split among Democrats or Republicans, but the Republicans were mostly opposed, while the Democrats were mostly for the measures as they were written. Mm-hmm. It is notable that regardless of party affiliation, none of the original Confederate states voted for the Civil Rights Bill of 1964.
Yeah.
Hmm. There's nothing quite like that to say, hey, we're still fucking racist down here, y'all.
Yeah.
Basically, if you look at the map, it's like the entire Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
The entire Southeast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The entire Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
That ever existed.
Still racist.
Yep. Still as racist 100 years later as they were in their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's notable. Yeah, okay, I read that. But the representatives simply flipped parties if they needed to, such as Strom Thurmond from South Carolina, who joined the Republicans from the next year on until he died a few decades later.
Ah.
Yeah, there was a party flip. Republicans that were for the Civil Rights Bill found it easier to suddenly become Democrats.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Democrats that were against it, such as in the South, decided, well, the Republicans are doing my thing now, so I'm going to go be one of them.
Yeah. Isn't it a pain in the ass to, like, get yourself flipped over, though, to...
Not really. Like, they make it real easy for anybody that wants to switch sides.
Huh.
Like, all of the legal wrangling and shit, that's handled by an army of other people.
Okay.
Yeah. They do make it hard for them to go independent, which has happened before. It happens regularly. You know, somebody will... And it, I think it's usually among, like, politicians that think they're going to get voted out or they're not going to primary in their next run.
Yeah.
The primaries are where, you know, voters get to decide, I want to keep this senator for my party or I don't, right? Yeah. And it goes to senators, congressmen, it goes to any kind of elected position. Where, let's say you are a Republican or a Democrat, you can choose who runs on the ticket in the primaries. Now, the people that already have those seats don't always primary.
Yeah.
So if they think they're not going to, because like what happened in New York State, for example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, she ran against the incumbent in that position that had been there for a couple decades at least. I don't remember his stats, but he'd been there long enough that he just thought he was comfortable in the position. Well, she got a groundswell of the public vote to primary her instead, which effectively kicked him out.
Yeah.
So regardless of whether the seat was won or not, he was gone. Hmm. He was gone. She was running, and that was all there was to it. So that's a way to fire them without changing a party, is to just primary somebody new. Now, sometimes when they see that shit coming, they can flip to independent.
Yeah.
And stand a chance at retaining their seat. So, it, you know, it's a calculated guess.
Yeah.
But Candace goes on to say, it was a watershed moment in American history, a pledged breakthrough for the black community. At long last, blacks would be able to bid farewell to the days of oppression and step fully inside the American dream. Of course, no such thing happened, or else I would have no need to write this book. In reality, despite our faithful marriage to the Democrat Party, America has made scarcely any improvement by way of closing the achievement gap with white America. I'm sorry, black America has made scarcely any improvement by way of closing the achievement gap with white Americans. I mean, honestly, black America, you could insert any color into there, really. I mean, a 2018 study by the Economic Policy Institute was commissioned as a follow-up to a similar study conducted some 50 years earlier. The results offered insight into the condition of black America today compared to the black America of Lyndon B. Johnson's time. Now, again, to her credit in the notes, Candace does provide a link to the report. I looked through it, and I looked up the authors first. Mm-hmm. The authors seem like a balanced group, so I read through the report. I'm not going to read through Candace's takeaway points from the report itself because she cherry-picks sentences from the report to set up her argument that things for the black community have gotten worse, when in fact the reverse is mostly true. Wages have gotten better. And education has gotten far better for black citizens. But incarceration rates are worse and home ownership numbers are virtually unchanged. The same percentage of people that owned a home, you know, in the 60s own a home now.
Yeah.
Which is not great. A lot of non-white folks are renters.
Yeah.
They're stuck in a cycle. Medical care is better. And black mortality rates are much better. I would argue here that black prison rates are only worse due to factors such as a bent judicial system and things such as the stagnation of wages and continued poverty and the fact that after getting out of prison, many people, even with the help of programs, struggle to find jobs and housing as former felons. Things have gotten better largely because of policies pursued by the Democrats at all levels.
Yeah.
You know, because... So, let's let Candace keep going. In short, despite overwhelmingly casting our votes for Democrat political candidates, disparities between white Americans and black Americans still exist, and across many categories have worsened. Certainly no sane person would make the argument that America has become a more racist country since the 1960s, which gives way to the obvious truth that these disparities have little to do with systemic oppressions. But obvious truths have never been the way of the Democrat Party. Like FDR and LBJ before them, today's Democrat leaders establish their bases by theatrically harping on the struggles of minorities. They lament the injustice of our circumstances with an all-too-familiar silver-lined promise that a vote for them will surely turn things around. Of course, the success of this repeat broken promise strategy is fueled by our acceptance of their victim narrative. And because victims cannot also be victors, the end result is a paradoxical nightmare. An endless cycle of voting for necessary change while refusing to change the way in which we vote necessarily. I hate how she writes.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it because...
That rather fast, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can't... You know, I didn't want to... When we started this, I made a promise that I wasn't going to read shit like she...
Speaks? Yeah.
However, it's impossible to do when conveying the message of the Gish Gallop.
Yeah, yeah.
I've learned to embrace it as much as fuck her. I hate her for this shit.
Yeah.
But what Candace fails to mention, of course, is that prior to the passage of the Civil Rights Bill, there was a real serious racial justice problem in America. It has arguably gotten better, of course, but people like her want to bypass any lingering or worsening problems by not acknowledging them or passing them off to another person. In her case, the culprit is the Democrat Party, who more often than not is trying to address issues caused by politicians from previous generations dragging their feet on fixing social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Candace goes on. Quote, what the hell do you have to lose? Donald Trump's words were direct and precise. He actually said that in his campaign announcement. What the hell do you have to lose? And as I watched him from my television screen in his August 19, 2016 campaign stop in Diamonddale, Michigan, I could not help but nod in agreement. He was emphatic as he implored blacks to consider voting for him in the upcoming presidential election. You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed.
It sounds like a Cartman that grew up.
You have no idea how accurate that is.
It really...
Yeah. You have no idea how accurate that is.
Just a grown-up Eric Cartman.
Yeah, except in his case, it wasn't just his mom bailing him out. It was also his dad.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of dollars of bailouts.
Ugh.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. It wasn't just a $1 million loan he got from the old man. It was more like hundreds of millions. You know, he owned casinos that lost money.
Isn't the whole point of owning a casino?
To be the boss and be the house, yes.
Yeah, because the house always wins. That's how it's supposed to be.
His casinos lost money.
How do you manage to make a casino?
Simple. You don't hire people that will tell you no. And you just run shit the way you think it should be run without taking any input from anyone ever. Because you have a fancy name on the building. He had to sell the casinos for them to become profitable under other managers. The Trump casinos still exist, to my knowledge. They had to be owned by literally any people other than him.
I feel like if you're going to have a casino, you get somebody that is highly reputable and vouched for, and then you go, look, I honestly don't know how to run any of this shit, but that's why you're here.
Yeah.
You run it, make me money, you get paid.
Make me money, be my flaw guy.
Yeah.
I'll pay you well.
When inevitably someone gets shanked in the lobby, it's that guy's fault.
Yeah. See? Yeah, nope. He lost money owning casinos, golf courses, hotels, etc.
Okay, I could see golf courses, not hotels.
No, golf courses are just a fancy way for fancy people to spend their money.
Fair enough.
You know, as long as you're paying a maintenance crew to do most of the work and you're paying your housekeepers and shit well. Now, here's what's fucked up. Mar-a-Lago does not have a golf course. I thought for years it did.
Where's Mar-a-Lago?
It's in Florida.
Is that one of his places?
That was also called the second White House during his administration. Because he would go to Mar-a-Lago a lot to just do whatever, just to fuck off.
Yeah.
I assumed he was golfing there. I didn't realize it's not a golf course until recently.
Ah.
But that also that is also where he sent, and there's pictures now of this, where he sent like 60 boxes of federal classified documents that he was in no way supposed to have. The whole story surrounding that is so fucked, we can't get into it right now. But there's a picture that recently came out. Now, everyone, too, up until the point of the picture's release, thought that it was at least a storage closet.
Yeah.
It's a fucking bathroom. It was a fucking bathroom. You could go in there and take a shit and read top secret documents.
I mean, if you're not reading top secret documents while taking a shit, are you really taking a shit?
No, you're really not. I mean, like, I wipe my ass with top secret documents, and you can bet that few people did, you know? I mean...
Oh, here's something on Nom. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I feel bad for this joke.
Yeah, God. Yeah, so, yeah. So... You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. This figure probably sounds bad because it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
The actual percentage at that time for black youths being unemployed was 18%.
All right.
Which is far different from 58%.
Yeah. No.
This is from fact-checking by PolitiFact and several other groups with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They also demonstrated how that figure could have been arrived, since it would have to include people that were as young as 16 who may be living in areas where minors typically cannot get work or who don't want to work because they are in school.
Yeah, yeah. That was a big reason why down in Florida a lot of kids didn't want to work, or when summer would come up, they'd go, peace!
Yeah. Taken by that same measure, 40% of white youths would also be unemployed, which also realistically doesn't match with reality.
No.
The real number is about 8%.
Hmm.
Candace goes on to say, in his blunt, matter-of-fact way, Trump called attention to a reality that had gone unspoken for far too long. While Democrats have long acknowledged our struggles and the crimes enacted against us, they have done little to provide actual remedies or prepare us for a future that does not center on our brokenness. Trump's speech was a call to action for anyone who dared to abandon the status quo in favor of real change. This moment, Trump's simple question forever altered me. I instantly felt a tide of urgency because deep down I knew the answer to his question.
Mm-hmm.
Deep down, we all know the answer to his question. We now know that Trump was indeed elected as the 45th president of the United States, just as we also know that the majority of the black vote went to his Democrat opponent, Hillary Clinton. What has transpired since then has been a social fracturing like nothing we've ever seen in this country. Hard lines have been drawn in the sand, and blacks have predictably stood on the left side of them. But as we approach the 2020 election, I am asking the black community, I am asking you, reader, to consider the realities of our current economic state, the condition of our schools and neighborhoods, the number of our young men who are incarcerated. The Democrat Party teaches that more law, more government, more state is the answer, but they are wrong. We cannot rely upon a hopelessly inefficient and burdensome government to fix what we ourselves refuse to do. My challenge to every American is simple. Reject the left's victim narrative and do it yourself, because we will never realize the true potential that this incredible country has to offer. In the land of the free and the home of the brave, if we continue to be shackled by the great myth of government deliverance. Throughout the rest of this book, I will detail just why I believe the Democrat Party's policies have led to the erosion of the black community by fostering a persistent victim mentality. I will explain how a radicalized push for feminism is both emasculating and criminalizing men who are needed to lead strong families, and I will reveal the fallacy of socialism in its inherent argument for the very same government that crippled black America in the first place. Lastly, I will expose the inefficiency of the left-leaning public education system and tackle the media's role in the collective brainwashing of our youth. And then I will ask again, what do you have to lose?
I was about to say, take a breath, man, you're turning red.
Fuck. Truth was, I had no notes separated between those paragraphs, so I just had to go for it.
Fair enough.
I had to fucking go for it.
The only thing separating those paragraphs is a little bit of space.
Yeah, a little bit of space in the script. So,
are we at least done with the intro now?
We are done with the intro now.
Fucking finally.
So, but we're not going to move on to the soda of the week just yet.
Okay.
We need to discuss this shit. Oh, my fucking God. Oh, my God. See, what kills me about people like her, right?
Yeah.
And they're all guilty of this. Mm-hmm. All these chuckle fucks are guilty of this. And that is, and I love that word, chuckle fuck. It took me a long time to be able to say that without laughing. But what these chuckle fucks don't get is that they will piss and moan about the very shit that they drag their feet on that a simple policy change can't fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, such as, like, why don't these people get a better education? Well, bitch, why are you complaining every time their schools need money?
Yeah.
You know, what are they supposed to do? You can't just go and, like, you know, and they'll say things like, oh, well, they don't need a new school there if they would just fix up the one that they have. Yeah, well, they tried to get the money to do that. And then you come in and scream about how it can't be done because reasons.
Yeah.
You can't raise taxes to do shit, apparently. Mm. You know, they expect private companies to come in and foot the bill for all these things where it's like, no. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is only going to contribute computers. They are not going to fix the water system.
Yeah, it's...
You know, this is not what they do. You can't expect plumbers to just give up their time to go and do this. Mm. They have to pay their bills, too.
Yeah, when you have the NBA visit a school, the NBA is not going to tell their players to go fix the air conditioning.
No, they are not. they're there to sign autographs and get photo ops and maybe give the kids some encouragement and maybe buy some shit for the school, but they're not, you know... Michael Jordan is not going to go run a new water main.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fucking... Google should not... Like, private companies should not be on the hook for shit that is a public concern, period.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's a public concern, then those public groups need money. The agencies need money to do the things they're supposed to be doing. But too many of these people, like Candace, I'm sure, allegedly... I'll say that. I will allege that Candace Owens probably has a tax attorney that scoots her through the system like every other rich chuckle fuck. She married into a family of rich chuckle fucks. She says in the book that she came from modest means, and this is something else that really gets me, and I'll repeat it as many times as I need to throughout this fucking fuck book. But Candace said... many times.
Yeah.
That she was a lifelong Democrat. Now, she will be the first person in any group setting to tell you about how the Democrats started the KKK way, way back, and they kept it going up until modern times. No Democrat denies this.
Yeah.
They're all like, yeah, that happened. And then we pushed through the Civil Rights Bill several times.
Yeah.
So fuck off with this shit already.
Yeah, they've made their amends.
Yeah, they've been working hard to make their amends.
Yeah.
You know, and like we live in a state that is a sanctuary state, in a sanctuary city, and I have never felt more safe.
Yeah.
I love the idea that we can go to different areas of our city and get whatever kind of fucking food we want.
Yeah.
You know?
It's real nice, you know, going, okay, what's in the area? Oh, hey, there's a Muslim place just down the way, and they have some on-par Arab food.
They do. They do. I was overjoyed, listeners, when we were in Florida. There was a halal place that, you know, they put up a sign that they were going to be opening up soon in this old Dairy Queen where we were. And I was ecstatic. I was like, oh my God, halal. I haven't had good halal food in a long time. Didn't care what country it was from. Didn't fucking matter. I knew that we were going to be eating good, and we did.
Yeah.
That place, if anybody's in Orange Park, Florida, you should totally check these guys out. They're called Dunya. Dunya. They're Iraqi, and their food is off the chain. It's so good.
God, especially the naan that they send out with just flatbread? About everything. Yeah, they're... Yeah.
It's
they're
not naan. It's Iraqi flatbread. I think it's lavash.
Oh, yeah, it's lavash. I think it's a lavash. It's a lavash, my bad.
The lavash is good? Know. You never had the coffee.
No.
They only do the coffee there.
Yeah, because I only ever got the takeout. I never got the, the dine-in.
Yeah, me and your mom dined in one day. Yeah. And I looked at the menu, and as I do at restaurants, I was like, I'll just have a coffee. And the lady's like, okay. She's like, it's really strong. I was like, bring it.
Yeah.
You know, just bring it. Just give it to me. I need that.
Yeah.
It's like, I hope it's strong. You have a reputation. Arab coffee is delicious. And she's like, will you need any cream? I said, no, ma'am. No, I will not. Just give it to me straight, please. I need this. She's like, okay. It took her several minutes to make it. It was made in the Turkish press style.
Yeah.
Which does leave some grinds in the bottom of a Doppio cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
You ever get it? If an Arab person of any stretch ever offers you coffee, take that shit black.
Okay.
Cream is an insult.
Okay. Don't British it.
Do not British it.
Okay.
And do not Americanize it. Take it the way it's given to you.
Okay.
And gently refuse adornments.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless they offer to do them. You do not add shit to that coffee. You try it the way it is.
Okay.
It's delish. It's so good. It's the blackest, darkest thing you'll ever have. And it will wake your ass up.
I'm sure.
It's like espresso's older brother that came to the party to beat everybody down. It's so good. I love Turkish press coffee. I can't get enough. But, yeah, so... But, yeah, they had all kinds of great shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but, like, here we have Lebanese food. We have Somali food. Yeah.
There's a place at one of the malls. I can't remember the name of it. It's Nun Nun or something like that.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. I walked up and they have their own, like, build your own pita or build your own gyro. And
yeah.
I just walked up and I ordered the gyro. And the guy, he was speaking the best English he could. And I was just going, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, I want the whole thing, the hell you make.
That was
I
your strategy at the Dragon Star.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
We have this wonderful Asian market here, listeners, called the Dragon Star. Amazing, amazing supermarket for Asian stuff. And we'd both gotten hungry, and he went over to the service counter where they were making sandwiches, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. You just...
Yeah. Yeah. I've so far found that if I'm... dealing with a foreigner that is making me a foreign style food, just shake my head and go, yes, yes. Because whatever the hell they're going to come out with...
It's going to be delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the other travel things that... I knew a guy who traveled a lot with his family. And he said, anywhere you go in the world, anywhere you go, just tell them you want the chef special, whatever it is. Mm. And just accept whatever it is and eat it. It's probably going to be awesome. But that was his travel tip for Japan. His family had gone all over Japan one summer, and he's like, every place they stopped, they avoided places that were obvious chain restaurants. They went to mom and pop shops. He's like, in rural Japan, you don't have a lot of options. So you just go to wherever the nearest restaurant is. You just sit down, you say, chef special, and they will bring you food.
Yeah.
There's enough English there. They understand those words. They'll bring you food. He's like, some of it's going to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
Just try it. That's all they want you to do. Like, just try it. He's like, I didn't like everything. But, you know, you have enough sake and water. Yeah, everything's going to be fine. He's like, I'm not driving. We have a driver for that. I'm not fucking driving. That doesn't care. Yeah. He's like, the countryside looks more awesome with sake. So, you know, sake and this weird octopus thing that I can barely say the name of. Yeah. But, yeah. So, yeah, I'm tentatively, aggressively looking forward to going through the rest of this book. I want to transmit Candace Owens' thoughts on socialism and other things that I have learned over time, you know, living as one does, that they're not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like where we live now, we have much higher taxes.
Yeah.
You know, we do. We have much higher taxes. Like, I'm a fucking tax wizard. And back in Florida, I was scoring us like $10,000 tax returns.
Yeah.
Here, my wizardry got us like $1,200.
Damn.
It's quite a change.
Yeah.
But...
And that was only based off a half a year, too. That wasn't even the full year.
Yeah, that was like half a year. And, but going into this year, even though our healthcare premiums here are higher by a wide margin, like we're paying literally 10 times the amount for healthcare here, which sounds bad, listener, but listen to what I have to tell you. In Florida, we had really shitty healthcare. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. It was only about $30 a month combined for medical and dental and the other shit. We're paying about $300 a month here for much better medical care. And I get to claim that on this year's taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I get to claim every dime we spent, including on the insurances, on this year's taxes.
Damn.
So that will go against the income that I'm making, which is higher. And, you know, hopefully we'll all sort out. And we'll either have no tax bill or we'll get a little bit back.
Yeah.
But our quality of life here is so much better. The park system here is fucking amazing. You know, and the civil services here are generally very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have any complaints, really, about life in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Nor specifically life in the Twin Cities. It's fucking awesome. And I urge everybody listening to this to at least consider visiting.
Yeah.
At least come here during the summer. For fuck's sake, you don't want to be wherever you are. It was 90 degrees today.
Yeah.
95 at the highest point. And I had to wait at one of my stops earlier. I had to get out of my car and wait. I don't want to tell these people what I do. But I had to get out of my car and wait for somebody. And I realized it was like 90 degrees.
Yeah.
I was in the shade of several buildings, but it was only 30% humidity. I can tell you it felt like a Florida 72.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
I even went for my walk in the park.
Yeah.
And that was pretty nice as well.
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today.
Like, yeah. And it was in the 90s.
Yeah. I did my normal circuit and it was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I sweated a little bit, but it was whatever.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, 30% humidity on a 90 degree day, you're going to sweat a little bit, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, like it's fucking awesome. We couldn't have imagined this. 90 degree day in Florida is secretly 120 due to 100% humidity.
Yeah.
And yeah, you hate everything.
Yeah.
And everybody.
Another time that I'd recommend visiting is that good early fall period when it's like just everything's starting changing. To turn brown and like it's orange and red and it's yellow like and purple, and it's beautiful to look at.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's amazing how cool it is here.
Yeah.
But so we're gonna get on to tonight's soda of choice. Get the glasses ready. Get the opener ready.
Yep, I got the opener right here next to the bottle.
Okay.
Shall I do it? I'll open it.
Nope. I'll do it. Okay. I'll do it. Okay. I'll do the thing. This was my idea.
All right.
So tonight's... Do you want to describe it?
It's...
Tell them the brand first. God.
It's WT Heck. Stands for What the Heck Sodas. And, this is quite possibly the least Italian thing they could have done. It is spaghetti.
Yes, spaghetti soda, you heard that right.
And the depiction on here is a fork with spaghetti rolled up on it with some sauce on top, which really doesn't seem appetizing when I say it out loud. It doesn't seem appetizing when you think about it.
Well, the soda itself is in a clear bottle. It's a red-colored soda, so there's probably a fuck ton of Red 40 in here. Mm. I don't want to read... Fuck, now I have to.
You sure you don't want me to read it?
Can you see it? Can you see it well enough to read it?
Yeah.
Go ahead, read off the ingredients.
Okay, where is the ingredients list? Is it?
Yeah, they're on the side there.
Okay. Ingredients, purified carbonated water, sugar, natural and artificial flavors, citric acid, sodium, bentonite, and Red 40.
Told you.
Bottled by Blue Sun Bottling Co.
Yeah. Which, as we've said before, has a store here. We are not plugging for these guys, but...
if you want some novelty sodas, their dill pickle, it...
Oh my god.
Yeah. It didn't disappoint, but it did disappoint.
No, I was shocked that it was as accurate as it was and equally as terrible because I fucking hate pickles.
I don't like dill pickles. I like bread and butter. Give me bread and butter pickles all day long. Dill pickles I can't do.
It was a soda.
I know.
Do you stand there and drink the dill pickle juice out of the jar when it's done?
No, I don't. I don't even drink the fucking butter pickles either.
Well, that's good. Yeah, we both had the same reaction to it, and our family at home was not willing to try it.
Yep.
I'm so glad the blue cheese one was a dud.
I am glad
that was their only chance. Yeah, they had one chance to get us, and that was it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna crack this bitch.
Here we go.
Oh, that was uneventful.
Yeah,
I was maybe I should shake it up the next time like a champagne bottle.
Yeah, but then it might.
Oh Lord! Wow.
Let me get a whiff of that.
Hold up. This is not a dud.
Oh, it's authentic.
I think so. I think we got the real thing. Honestly, it smells like cooked meat. Right?
It smells like that one time that I accidentally got soda on the grill when I was working at Wendy's. Okay, it wasn't an accident. One of my coworkers dared me to do it because we wanted to see what would happen if I poured Coca-Cola on the grill.
Okay, hold on. Before I pour this up for you, we should have our alternative choices ready to go.
Yeah.
What's your alternative choice tonight?
Some Mountain Blackberry, clearly Canadian.
Okay. Mine is Bubbly Coconut Pineapple. Yep. Because it's a seltzer made in America. Fuck you. Yeah.
Damn it. My Canadian had about as much pop as I thought it would. I don't know why I put the taste of blackberry on my tongue when I'm about to have spaghetti.
Because we need to know what life is like before we die.
Hopefully, I don't witness what happened to your stomach when we had the dill pickle.
Are you kidding? I don't want to remember that shit, but it's in there forever, isn't it?
All right. It sure is. Oh, God. Okay. This
it smells hang so on. Bad. Okay,
hang on, right. Hang on. I need to just... It smells like Italian seasoning.
I know, right?
It smells like the shit that I put on the...
You put on stuff that you, out of the shaker bottle or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, let's go for this. Here we go.
Oh, God.
Okay, it's not as bad.
Why?
It's sugary.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't like the aftertaste. Oh.
It's not as bad as the dill pickle. Man, it's weird. I'm not going to finish this.
Neither am I, but... I mean...
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's...
That's gross. It's so bad.
It's thick, too. It's like a...
Yeah.
Like, it has no reason to have a thick consistency, but it tastes thick. I don't want to put that next to my...
Here, I'm going to put it down here. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just keep that away from my birds at least.
Well, if we're using dill pickle as the ultimate standard of nasty, and I think we should.
Yeah.
If we're using dill pickle as the ultimate standard of nasty, and blue cheese as the zero point.
Yeah.
Between the two, because it didn't get a fair shake, but fuck them.
Yeah.
I would say this is a little better. Than straight up sugar water?
Yeah.
Just because it has a flavor that I don't want to puke?
Yeah.
But I don't recommend it.
I'd put it, if we had to rate it on a scale of 10, 10 being good, it'd be probably a 2,
I think it would generously be a 2.
Yeah. If I absolutely had no other source of water.
The dill pickle is a negative number. What number? Don't know.
It doesn't really exist.
I haven't had anything touch my tongue that made me want to throw up in so long that I don't remember if I ever did.
You didn't throw up, nothing, but I watched your stomach click.
I wanted to.
I was watching you.
I wanted to. I didn't even swallow that shit. I spit it back into the glass.
Yeah,
I was
I saw it. Like, so it touched your tongue, you spit it back out, and immediately with a bottle of water just...
Yeah. Chugging. Oh, God, it took forever for that to leave my mouth, too.
Oh, God, it's burned my taste buds. It's the other problem. Like, I just tried to wash it away with BlackBerry, and it made it worse.
That sucks. You should have got a seltzer.
I can't deal with the bitterness of the seltzers.
I don't know what we're talking about. This is great. Excuse me. There we are. All right, well.
Oh, never mind. I didn't drink enough.
Yeah, you gotta get more of it down. Yeah, so any thoughts? What?
Sorry, it's my bottle is.
Yeah, it's fine where it is.
Well, your impression of Donald Trump, honestly, it really does sound like a grown up Eric Cartman.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, what do you have to lose, you know?
Yeah. What kind of, like, the way that she starts to, like, climax almost.
Oh, yeah.
As she's, like, in that last paragraph there, it's like, Jesus Christ, lady, pull your hand out your pants and finish the sentence.
Yeah. It's very masturbatory.
Wait, let me leave.
Very masturbatory.
Let me leave you the room and the property before you get off, lady.
Now, this brings me to another point.
Okay.
There was a white guy with MSNBC. I don't remember his name right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure listeners could look him up. But he got famous for, I think it might have been Chris Hayes, but don't quote me on this. Anyway, he got famous for during Obama's initial run for the presidency. Obama had done a speech somewhere, and this guy was covering it. And he got so much shit for saying that during one of Obama's speeches, he said, quote, I felt a tingle go up my leg. Why would you share that? Why would you share that to a national audience? You know, but it sounded like he had this orgasmic reaction to one of Obama's early hope and change speeches.
Yeah.
You know, which everybody thought when Obama got into office, oh, well, maybe there's going to be some actual hope and change here. And then he started appointing the people that he appointed, and people were like, oh, okay, never fucking mind. Nothing's changing. We're all fucked. But,
I just got to say on that part as well is the only time I think you'd want to share that kind of reaction with a national audience is if you are trying to lose your job and you're just like, guys, this is giving me the hardest hard-on I've ever had.
Well, you know, that's... Well, especially back then. I mean, we didn't have podcasts or... You know, the internet was still very different back then. I don't think Facebook even existed yet. But, so, you know, what we have here, though, from her is definitely a very masturbatory section of the book that I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, but the thing is, you have to realize, too, who the audience that she's writing for is.
Yeah.
She is not writing for us.
No.
She's not writing for, hopefully, the listeners of this show. She is writing for people who actually do masturbate during Donald Trump's speeches, or did. I would hope that some of them have grown up. Since the insurrection, anyway.
Yeah.
But, that's who she's writing for. So these are people who are really, like, if they're reading it at her pace, they are really getting into it.
Yeah.
There might have been children birthed as a result of this book.
God, it also, it reminds me of that one sci-fi book that we were listening to on our way up here.
After the Revolution?
Yeah, After the Revolution. I want to say it was the Pope guy that...
Oh, Pastor Mike.
Yeah, Pastor Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, it slightly reminds me of that with, like, the absolute, you know, fist slamming a desk sort of, I realize my knee is too hollow to make the sound, desk sort of yelling speech of passion and, oh my God, you jizz in your pants, man, stop it, just stop.
It's the it's the passionate street preacher, well, revival preacher mindset. Yeah. And, you know, I watched so many of those people growing up because I had to, because they wanted me to be in the clergy. So I had to become very familiar with stagecraft and all that bullshit. And, yeah, no, it's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst because it's formulaic.
Yeah. And you know? I have a hard time. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
In the, this is way off the topic, but the D&D campaign that I'm running,
yeah,
the sci-fi one, I'm trying to have kind of like this holy war happen, and the key part of it all is I need the Pope figure of the evil Catholic Church I have. I need this.
Not far off from the actual Catholic Church, but go on.
Yeah, human experimentation, though. But you know, no, I need to kind of narrate one of these speeches, but I don't know how to write a speech like that. I can put the passion into it, but when I try to write it, I'm just like, come on, man, this is bullshit.
See, but, you gotta step over that.
Okay.
Because they do.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no bullshit wall for these people. There's no bullshit wall.
Okay.
There's no bullshit wall. Yeah. For these people, there's no bullshit wall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say you need to watch Alex Jones, but that man, if he has one talent, hell, even Tucker. But Tucker has writers that write a no bullshit speech for him every day now.
Yeah.
He does videos on Twitter since he got fired from Fox.
Yeah.
And Knowledge Fight has started going after him.
Mm-hmm.
They never really paid much attention to him before.
But now they're...
Well, Alex Jones keeps going on vacation.
Ah.
He's trying to burn up his money before the bankruptcy filings are done.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway,
he should go to Disney World and spend.
He's
like
in Florida right now.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
maybe. Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe don't. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it helps any, the Florida location's closing down anyway. So
see, he's burning through all this money, and one of the people that has sued him,
yeah,
that is supposed to get something out of his ass, had to do a GoFundMe for $100,000 for her cancer treatments.
Jesus.
And he's out there burning that easily in like a month. He could just, you know, maybe throw her a fucking bone,
mm-hmm,
and pay for some shit, and said she had to run a GoFundMe.
Yeah. See, that's the difficult part of it.
No one at InfoWars can quite do what Alex does, which is to just spout a fucking minutes and minutes of the same bullshit, and then go into an ad pivot.
Yeah.
Nobody at InfoWars can do it like he does. No one.
Yeah.
To the point that they don't even seem to try. And their ad pivots are the worst.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, they...
Here's some nuclear genocide, but...
Yeah.
Do you want to get those abs toned?
Yeah, that's basically how it is. Like, well, we're, and, but the way that Alex does it, though, he does it in such a way of, like, just, it's over for humanity, and, you know, you better stock up on these vitamins.
Oh, okay. So he goes, it's all over for humanity, we're all gonna die, so you should buy these vitamins for your bunker.
Yeah. You're gonna need gold to trade in the days of mutants.
Yes, because muties are going to want gold.
Yeah, the muties are going to want gold, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, they, so yeah. Yep, we're going to be getting into the meat of this book in the next one, and oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. It's, the worst part is going and having to do things like getting a temporary subscription to newspapers.com, because I will be damned if they get $75 out of me. But, mm-hmm, dear listener, if you're still somehow here, good for you. You may have noticed, if you've bothered going to the website we're setting up, that there will be a Patreon there. We are going to be entirely listener-supported on this. because I'm not going to run any ads. I'm not going to join up with a podcast network that runs ads. I hate skipping through ads on podcasts. I will not do that to people. Excuse me. Because it's not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what kind of money these other people are pulling in, but I can't sit there and read ad copy for shit that I myself would never touch or buy.
Yeah.
I can't do that shit. It's why I did not pursue a career in radio, because that was assuredly going to be my future at some point, was having to read ad copy for things that I despised or loathed or just plain didn't like.
Yeah.
So that's why I never did that. But here we are. We have come to the conclusion of this fucking introduction, and it's all over now. So episode 6 is going to be getting into the first chapter of her book, which I hope is at least easier to get through than this fucking shit was. Although, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
Things I didn't know, I am actually learning a lot just having to go research and debunk her bullshit.
Well, there's that,
so
at least.
There we are. If there is a silver lining to this fucking cloud, that's it.
It's the excess knowledge in your head.
Yeah, like I needed more.
Yeah. And but, I mean, I'm also getting a little bit of it when we do this as well.
Yeah. I have to retain this crap and then
spew it
to you. Yes.
Yeah, and then there's only like a 80% chance that most of it'll stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we are. But so let's sign off. Bye.
Ciao.